From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. Hey, it is June 7th, 2016. That's right. Happy Tuesday. We are so honored you have allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon once again. On today's show, we've got a hot one for you, folks, as we will invite Rex Wilks, okay? He is the head coach for the state championship Waverly Girls Track and Field Team, the very first state championship for that program in school history. How about that? Rex will come on the show to talk about that remarkable accomplishment for the Warriors. Also, yes, Jim Harbaugh makes our airwaves yet again. I tell you what, we cannot do one show without getting away from something that Jim Harbaugh has either said or done or tweeted. It's crazy, folks. But Jim Harbaugh is criticizing college football yet again. We'll dive into that. Also, the Detroit Tigers are on a bit of a roll right now. They have now won 4 straight. And last night, a certain rookie continues to have one stellar outing. In my opinion, clearly the favorite to win the American League Rookie of the Year. You don't want to miss that, Chad. And on the back end of the show, we will invite our newest additions to this Current Sports team throughout this summer. We will chat with Bria Thompson and Sierra Pryor, our new Current Sports production assistants. You'll get a chance to hear about their fantastic backgrounds and what they have in store for all of you out there throughout the summer months. And, of course, we'll have Tickle Tuesday for you and so much more. Our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But, hey, you know how we get this party started. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, folks, the Diamond Classic Finals are now set. That's right, in semifinal action yesterday at Cooley Law School Stadium, Grand Ledge topped DeWitt 10-4, while Holt handled business against Mason in an 8-3 dub. The Comets and Rams will meet on Wednesday night for the entire enchilada. Grand Ledge will try to capture a third straight Diamond Classic title. How impressive is that? 7 in 8 years. And 26th overall. They have just completely dominated throughout that tournament's history. And keep it locked to WKAR.org and, of course, here at Current Sports Radio, as we will have wall-to-wall coverage from that championship game the following day, this Thursday. The George Alderton Male and Female Athletes of the Year were announced yesterday for Michigan State. Men's basketball senior Denzel Valentine, soon to be balling out in the NBA from Lansing, Michigan, was named the George Alderton Male Athlete of the Year, while redshirt junior forward Ariel Powers from the Detroit, Michigan, of the women's basketball team earned George Alderton Female Athlete of the Year honors. Denzel Valentine, a 6-time National Player of the Year. He was also a consensus first-team All-American and the Big Ten Player of the Year and Most Outstanding Player of the Big Ten Tournament. Powers earned third-team Associated Press All-America honors. She set a single-season scoring record with 697 points, including a career-high 40 points against Minnesota, en route to becoming Michigan State's all-time leading scorer with 1,817 buckets in just 3 years. Impressive stuff. Yep, Michigan head football coach Jim Harbaugh briefly spoke to reporters in Baltimore yesterday and addressed the ongoing NCAA compliance situation. Now, on Saturday out in Tampa Bay, Florida, he was told he can't sign autographs for prospective recruits. Then he was told he can't take photos with them. Today, he addressed those restrictions. Quote, "I believe we can do interviews," Harbaugh told reporters that, including ESPN.com. Quote, "That's what we've been told. You were there. You saw what's going on with the changing daily rules. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. Harbaugh went on to elaborate here. More of what he had to say in the blink of an eye. Don't go anywhere. Michael Fulmer continued his scoreless streak with six innings of two-hit ball while the Tigers beat up on J.A. Happ, extending their winning streak to four games with an 11-0 shutout win over the Toronto Blue Jays on Monday night at Comerica Park. Fulmer is now 6-1 on the year. He tossed seven or more scoreless innings in each of his previous two outings, was denied a chance at a third only by a long Tigers sixth inning and a lopsided score. He still extended his scoreless streak to 22 1/3 innings, a Tigers rookie record. A pair of singles from ninth hitter Darwin Barney were the lone hits Fulmer allowed, along with three walks. Get this stat, folks. It blows my mind here. According to research on Baseball Reference, Fulmer is the first Tigers pitcher since at least 1913. None of us were thought of around then, right? To toss three consecutive outings of at least six scoreless innings on three or fewer hits. That is nuts. Max Scherzer back in 2013 and Mickey Lolich back in 1968 were the only other Tigers to throw such outings in back-to-back starts. Insane in the membrane, folks. Matt Boyd, 0-1 on the year. The former Blue Jays prospect who came over in the David Price trade last summer will face his old team a second time as he makes his third start of the season for the Detroit Tigers tonight. NBA TV special on Allen Iverson, AI, The Answer, aired last night, shedding a little light on the presumptive Hall of Famer's bitter divorce from the Detroit Pistons in the late 2008-09 year. Now, NBA TV analyst and former Michigan State hoop star Steve Smith conducted one-on-one interviews with Allen Iverson, and he went on to tell Smith this, quote, "Detroit was a bad situation for me. I was told something, and I was promised something that wasn't to be." If you remember, Pistons president Joe Dumars shocked the basketball world in November of 2008 when he traded franchise icon Chauncey Billups, Mr. Big Shot, to the Denver Nuggets in exchange for Iverson. The Pittsburgh Penguins moved one game closer to their first Stanley Cup title since 2009 and fourth overall in franchise history with a 3-1 victory over the San Jose Sharks last night. The win gave the Pens a 3-1 edge in the best of seven series. The Pens blocked a playoff franchise high, 38 shots in game three. There's an extra day off before the series resumes in Pittsburgh on Thursday. Actor Will Smith and former heavyweight champion Lennox Lewis will be among eight pallbearers in services held Friday for Muhammad Ali. The services for Ali in his hometown of Louisville, Kentucky, will include a procession and private burial, and later in the day, a public memorial at the KFC Yum Center. It will be held at 2 p.m. Eastern Time with 15,000 tickets available. And last but certainly not least, I could not believe this news that came across my phone last night. Professional mixed martial artist Kimbo Slice died yesterday at the age of 42. This quote comes from Bellator president Scott Coker, making this statement, quote, "We are all shocked and saddened by the devastating and ultimately loss of Kimbo Slice, a beloved member of the Bellator family, a charismatic, larger-than-life personality that transcended the sport," end quote. There is no word on what caused Kimbo's death. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open right now, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Without further ado, I do believe it's about that time to start the show.
going to deal with Kareem, and there's no way they can deal with James Worthy. And the thing that we can do that will affect them and cause them problems is that we could set up and we could run on the fast break. Stephen A., we average 118 points with hand checking, with all of that. And yes, you're right. Dennis Johnson, those guys did. Always bigger guys gonna cause me problems, but at the same time, I was still effective. That's why I was voted MVP of the 87 finals, going up against my main man, who I really love, and Dennis Johnson. But my Lakers, our will to win, our knowledge of the game, also how smart we were at the game. See, we're gonna take some away. We're not gonna give Golden State everything that they do now, because we were too smart. Pat Riley was a master at coming up with a game plan to go up against everybody we went against in the finals or in the playoffs. And one thing we were great at, executing on that game plan.
Yes, that's how you start a show. Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy, happy Tuesday. It, again, is Tuesday, June 7, 2016. And before I move forward here and proceed with the show, I want to give a special thanks to all of our listeners out there who tuned in to our 60-minute tribute to the greatest of all time yesterday, Muhammad Ali. You know, we had to do something special, and we completely just flipped the show on its heels and just said, you know what? Let's just do 60 minutes of tributing, arguably, the greatest athlete of all time in Ali. Again, special thanks to those who came on our airwaves. Ali Easley of Crown Boxing, who was live in studio with us with his lovely daughter. We then welcome to the show Rob South, former WKAR reporter, as Rob told a very candid story of getting a chance to meet Ali in person and actually interview the man and sit down with lunch for him. Crazy stuff, right? Also, Bob Every, chairman of the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame and Boxing Hall of Famer. Bob Every joined me on the show to talk about his relationship with Muhammad Ali over the years. And we, of course, had current state's own Scott Pohl to share a one-on-one interaction with Muhammad Ali at the O'Hare Airport. Very cool stuff, folks. If you happen to miss that jam-packed hour, all you have to do is simply visit WKAR.org to tune in and listen. Well, thank you, SOS Band, for that lovely intro that, of course, encompassed the voice of the most recognizable athlete to ever come out of Michigan State University, Irvin Magic Johnson. And my question is, if you still care about this question, I tell you what, I feel like every other month we're having a debate about an old-time baller comparing his team or himself to the record-setting 2016 Golden State Warriors squad. You know, it's I say this all the time. When you have a conversation, when you compare eras, there's no way to be right. Let's just be real here. There is no way, unless you have invented a time machine, there is no way that you can sit there and say that this team is better than your team or this player was better than this player, because it's virtually impossible. You know, if someone has a hard argument for somebody and they back it up with facts, because I'm big on that, anytime you have a debate, you got to come correct. You have to back it up with facts, numbers. If you back it up and the other person can do the same, it's a really gray argument. It's really no black and white, all right? Only in certain conversations. So Magic Johnson, literally, I saw this interview that he had with ESPN's First Take with Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless. It airs each and every weekday morning on ESPN. They had Magic Johnson on around, I believe, 12 noon. And Magic weighed in around 12:20. And immediately after he weighed in, it was posted on the front page of ESPN.com. And I said, oh, that's golden. I gotta cut that for today's intro. So let's have some fun today. Why not? I know that many people out there, you know, no one's going to be right in this conversation. Everyone has an opinion, okay? And again, you are comparing eras. You are comparing the Los Angeles Lakers of the 1980s, where Magic Johnson was the head man of that squad, along with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, going against Larry Bird. I mean, what an era of basketball, right? I really wish I had a time machine just to go back and be able to watch those guys in person. I was born in 1990, all right? Right on the heels of the Detroit Pistons back-to-back championships that encompassed guys of, like, you know, Bill Laimbeer and Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars, Rick Mahorn, Vinny Johnson. I mean, that team was incredible, right? So I didn't get a chance to see Magic Johnson and the Lakers or Larry Bird and the Celtics. Or, I mean, you could go further and further back into the greats who have ever played the game. I never got the chance to sit there and watch those guys in person. Only got a chance to see clips when I was old enough to know who those guys were and what they meant to the game of basketball. So, you know, you're comparing the 80s Los Angeles Lakers that were certainly a dynasty, along with the Boston Celtics of that very same period, to the 2016 Golden State Warriors. The game is different. The way it's officiated is totally different. The way it's played is different. I mean, like Magic said, I mean, the Warriors are a team that is ideally revolutionizing the game. It's becoming a guard game today, folks, and it's becoming so shot-heavy. Rarely do you see a round-and-pound game where you throw it inside to your center and let that dude work and play off of him. It's completely the opposite now. The guards are the playmakers, and the big men work off of them. They get the rebounds, get putbacks. It's rare where you see the ball dumped in the paint and you see a center just go at it. The game has changed, folks. So my question to you all is going to be a fun one throughout this hour is, who would you take? Would you take Magic's Lakers of the 80s? Or would you take the 2016 Golden State Warriors? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And before I move on and talk about a man who we brought up countless times on this show, and it's amazing because I also feel like this man is revolutionizing, the game of college football, especially in the offseason, Jim Harbaugh is such a compelling figure because I have not gone through a period like this where we are talking about the game of college football as it relates to summer camps so extensively like we have with the Michigan football team. It's amazing. So I do believe that Jim Harbaugh is revolutionizing how journalists cover college football today. It's going to ideally become, if this satellite camp thing, you know, continues to get bigger and bigger each and every year, coverage of college football is going to be all year round. It won't just end in January, folks. So we'll get to Jim Harbaugh in just a sec, but I know this man right now, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance, who is an NBA fanatic. I know he wants to weigh in on this conversation, even though, again, I asked, just like the SOS band just asked, do you still care? I don't know if I care about this debate anymore, Isaac, but what do you think about what Magic had to say comparing his Lakers to the Golden State Warriors?
Well, and I don't care about this debate anymore. It's hard to compare across generations, especially when you're comparing a team that came around right after the inception of the three-point line, where teams and players shot less threes than Steph Curry did in one season. I mean, you can't really make that cross-cultural gap and bridge it. So I think it's a hard comparison. With that being said, I do think that there are two teams really in contention for the best team ever slot. I think that's the 95-96 Chicago Bulls and the 2015-2016 Golden State Warriors. So, no, if I had to choose, I would go with the Warriors. I think the way they spaced the floor, and then as was exemplified in Game 1 of this Finals, their bench depth too. The Showtime Lakers had such a great starting five with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, James Worthy, Byron Scott, and of course Magic Johnson. But I'm not sure if they had the bench depth. They had A.C. Green, who was quite good, but I'm not sure if they had other players on the bench who could necessarily match the Warriors. So, no, I'd actually have to go with the current guys, the Golden State Warriors.
Well, first off, there's two parts I want to address with that answer, Isaac. I want to ask you this, though. Does that answer change if I give you the year in which they play? If they're playing in 2016, I assume you're taking the Warriors. If you take the Warriors and put them in the 80s, the way the game was officiated was totally different. I mean, all he said, today's flagrant foul was yesterday's average foul or no call, to be honest with you. You know, so it's so different. There's so many different dynamics in this conversation. But are you still taking the Warriors if you take that team and throw them in the 80s?
I think I would, simply because, and that answer changes from the 90s to the 80s, because in the 90s, people were well accustomed to having the three-point line. They were used to it. But in the 80s, not only did they not shoot it quite as much, they weren't used to defending it either. And let alone Steph Curry can pull up from 5-10 feet beyond that line. I think the physicality helps out the Lakers. I think that's a 7-game series if they play in just about any era, to be honest. But at the same time, I still go with the Warriors. Now, if you put it in the 95-96 Bulls context, where there was that same brand of physicality, but they were more used to having to guard three-point shooters. No, in that case, then I give it to the Bulls if you're playing with 90s rules, because you're exactly right. That physicality, the ability to foul somebody, to punch them in the face without getting thrown out of a game. We saw classic fights between Larry Bird and Dr. J.
Right, I miss it.
That
would
never happen again against Kurt Rambis of the Lakers and Kevin McHale.
Right.
You would never see that in today's NBA. But I still go with the Warriors just because of talent, just because of that shooting ability.
I'll have to go to the Lakers. I would argue
and
the
that's
opposite.
Fair.
Again, apples and oranges here, right? But at the same time, I just feel as though if you get physical with the Warriors, I've seen times throughout this year where teams have been able to push this team to the brink.
Yep.
The Thunder, they were physical. They adopted
Stephen
that.
Adams.
And, yep. Exactly, Stephen Adams. They adopted that physical nature in the Western Conference Finals. And in Game 1 of the NBA Finals, you saw a bit of that nature, you know, in the scheme that the Cleveland Cavaliers had against Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson have not had a great NBA Finals thus far, and a lot of it has to do with a lot of bodies being thrown at them and a lot of bumping off of screens. But at the same time, that team is so deep. Now, when you talk about teams being deep, that Lakers team was so deep, Isaac. I'll throw out a few names here. So, of course, you got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right? Magic Johnson is on that squad. Michael Cooper.
That's
Earl
true.
Jones. Mitch Kupchak. Bob McAdoo. Kurt Rambis. Byron Scott. Larry Springs, Jamal Wilkes, James Worthy. I mean, that team is so deep, dude. I mean, that team is as deep or if not deeper than the Warriors. I don't know, dude. It'll be a fun series. That's going 7, I think, all right?
Yeah, let's go play this on 2K right after. You know, you can do that nowadays, right. And that's how they settled the Warriors and the 95-96 Bulls complaints and the different arguments on each side who would win that game, that contest. So I think that's actually a good one to put to the test. I'm with you, though. The era and the year in which you played
it matters.
That changes everything.
If they're playing in 2016, I think the Warriors may have an advantage when it comes to the perimeter game.
Yep.
And overall, the way that how the game is called has a lot to do with it.
And
a lot
it's almost
it.
A like-for-like comparison in that these are the two teams which you can say they almost play a run-and-gun brand of basketball, but they still have some of the top defenses. The Showtime Lakers were regularly in the top 10 for defensive rating. They had a brilliant defensive scheme, and of course that starts with the man at the one, the man up top, Magic Johnson, and goes all the way down to the five with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. With the Warriors, it's very similar. They force a lot of turnovers. Klay Thompson, you can make a debate that he's a top 10 defender in the league right now. Draymond Green, of course, back-to-back runner-up for the Defensive Player of the Year award. So they're very similar teams, very like-for-like. I think almost if you groomed those players in different eras, we'd have the same teams just in reverse years.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities, I'll tell you that. But I will say one thing. No one's guarding Magic Johnson on the Warriors team.
No, that's true.
Guarding that. That's a mismatch just everywhere, dude. All right, let's transition now to I really don't want to talk about this, but
you want me to say it for you so you don't
have
to say it?
Can you, please?
Jim Harbaugh.
Here we go. This is like the thousandth time we brought his name up on Current Sports. But he stays in the news, and you have to – this thing about Jim Harbaugh, you can love him, you can hate him, at the end of the day, everybody across the board has to respect the man, okay? Because what he's doing is unprecedented in the world of college football. I've never seen anything like this. Never seen anything like this where, you know, you have this whole satellite camp tour taking place. And usually, you know, I was listening to, I forget the name of the show. It was some national pundit. I was just driving around. I forget the name of the show I was listening to. But they were just talking about how, as journalists, Jim Harbaugh has really ramped up the coverage for college football to now become a year-round thing, especially for Michigan football beat writers. If you are a journalist covering the Michigan football team, when are you taking your vacation? That's the question I have, because, I mean, you have all of these satellite camps. You know, most of the journalists are at these satellite camps covering it so extensively. And then right when the satellite camps are done, then you're talking about preparing for the college football year, which will be right around the corner. When the final satellite camp for U of M is done, there is not much time between that ending and preparation for next year. I mean, Jim Harbaugh is a workaholic and is doing something that has never been done in college football history. Now, where I want to go with this conversation is a bit different. I won't bore you with the conversation that we've had throughout the months about the satellite camps in particular. What I will debate on this show today is about a comment that Jim Harbaugh had this week concerning the NCAA and the world of college football itself. Michigan coach Jim Harbaugh, he briefly spoke to reporters in Baltimore today and addressed an ongoing NCAA compliance situation. Now, on Saturday in Tampa, Florida, he was told he can't sign autographs for prospective recruits. Then he was even told that he can't even take a picture with them. Today, he addressed those restrictions. I'm going to read a quote here. This is what he had to say. Quote, "I believe we can do interviews. That's what we've been told. You were there. You saw what's going on with the changing daily rules. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. The NCAA compliance people are here. They've been at every single one. The NCAA has sent at least one or two of their people to each of our camps, and we've had one of our compliance people at each one of these camps. That notion that there's not oversight of these camps, you've seen it with your own eyes. There absolutely is." And he goes on to say this: "Football gets the majority of the scrutiny and the rules that are intended to hurt the student athlete, and it makes no sense. That's why I'm pointing this out, because some of these other sports aren't getting it." Now, he told the campers earlier that was because the NCAA is making up rules as it goes along. ESPN.com reported that he said that statement was a joke. This is coming from Jake Lorium via Twitter. Jim says, quote, "NCAA made a rule yesterday that we're not allowed to take pictures with you guys at camps. They're making them up as they go along," end quote. I want to bring this conversation up because you guys know that when it comes to my opinion of the NCAA, I'm not a big fan. I believe that the NCAA tries to control way too much. And some of the rules that I see for college athletes are downright ridiculous. Simple as that, folks. Now, I understand college football is big business, and coaches out there have a ton of pressure to play the whole recruiting game to try and woo some of the big recruits in the nation. But when it goes as far as you can't take a picture with them, I mean, we're talking about a photo, folks. A simple photo. How does a photo give you an advantage in wooing a recruit to your program? I don't know. Can you explain that? Can you explain that? I mean, we are grasping at straws right now. The NCAA is becoming so nitpicky when it comes to the world of recruiting and what you can and can't do that I don't know how a Division I college coach, especially those who coach football, those who coach men's basketball, I don't know how you can do your job without turning your hair gray. I don't get it. I just don't get it. So in this conversation, I agree with Jim Harbaugh. I believe that the NCAA, they have too much control, if you ask me. You know, when it comes to the upper echelons of it. I mean, they want their hands on so much that it becomes not fun to be a college athlete to a certain standpoint, folks. I don't get it. So in this regard, in this conversation, Isaac, I totally see where Jim Harbaugh is going.
Yeah, I agree, because this funny thing is we've agreed with Jim Harbaugh pretty much all along through these satellite camps.
Crazy, right?
It's hard not to. I mean, the guy, he's got controversial methods for getting into the media. He likes making that sort of controversy. Whatever's press is good press. That's the mantra that he lives by pretty much. But at the same time, he is right about this too. It does seem like these rules are quite arbitrary. First off, you do have to just stand back and admire the charisma that this head coach has, that recruits want autographs from a head coach of a football team, a college football team. They want autographs and they want pictures. That's pretty cool stuff. But for the NCAA to ban that, that doesn't make any sense to me. That seems nonsensical. What benefit is Harbaugh getting from this unfairly? What loss is the NCAA recouping because of this? I don't understand any of these rules necessarily. And the timing of them, yeah, it almost seems to coalesce perfectly with the satellite camp schedule. So it seems arbitrary, it seems random, and it's stupid.
It certainly is. And, you know, I bring up this example all the time just to kind of put in perspective just how ridiculous, absolutely just mind-boggling some of these NCAA rules are. You know, I always bring up the situation with Shabazz Napier of UConn. If you remember Shabazz Napier, I'm sure many Michigan State basketball fans know that name because UConn took out Michigan State in the NCAA tourney, I believe it was two or three years ago. And Napier was a player for UConn. And I remember Napier saying, I have a quote here from Napier, quote, "We do have hungry nights that we don't have enough money to get food. Sometimes money is needed. I don't think you should stretch it out to hundreds of dollars for playing because a lot of guys don't know how to handle themselves with money. I feel like a student athlete, sometimes there's hungry nights where I'm not able to eat, but I still got to play up to my capabilities." So the NCAA had a rule where they limited the amount of meals you could get in a certain time span. I don't know what that time span was, leaving many ball players like Napier hungry. And this is crazy to me because this is the NCAA we're talking about. This is an institution that makes millions of dollars on top of millions every single year, but yet you have regulations as to how many times a student athlete can eat. Shouldn't that be a program-inflicted rule, not by the NCAA? I mean, shouldn't the coach say something like that, not the overall umbrella? It just blows my mind sometimes, Isaac.
There's a quote on a Wale song, actually, Theory 11-111.
All right.
And the quote is, "The NCAA has the best business model in the United States. They make a lot of money, and guess what? They don't pay the employees anything."
Nothing.
And that's exactly the case. And when the athletes receive these full scholarships, that's not NCAA incentivized. That's not funded by the highbrows over at the NCAA. That's all the school. So if the school wants to pay these athletes or pay for their meals, God forbid that the athletes eat a little bit late at night or whatever the complaint was from the NCAA, yeah, the school should be able to fund that by their choice because it's an independent body. Mm-hmm. The NCAA is far more dependent on these schools than they are the other way around.
Right.
Yeah, than the schools are on the NCAA. The problem is there's one entity in the NCAA and 120 FBS college football schools under the umbrella of the NCAA. My simple proposal would be, why not just pay for these athletes like it's a job? You don't have to pay them hundreds of thousands of dollars, but pay them minimum wage for the hours that they put in.
Because, I said the same thing.
Like
you're working at the local restaurant. You know what I mean? Like, if you put in a certain amount of hours, you get compensated for that money. And don't tell me that university does not have that the money to give away, okay?
Yes.
When you're seeing around campus left and right, different buildings being bought. I mean, it makes no sense.
Yep.
It makes no sense to me.
And I've got an academic scholarship, and you know what that requires me to do? Stay in school pretty much, and I already have it. Right, I can work other jobs. I work plenty of other jobs, in fact, and it helps me out. These guys don't have the time to work other jobs because of the huge commitment, the time commitment that's required from them because of their athletic scholarship. So, no, just pay them for what they do. It's that simple. They're making money for the school. They're helping you out.
Preaching to the choir, my man. Phone lines are open. 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll be chatting with Rex Wilkes, coach for the state championship Waverly High girls track and field team. That and more. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, our question of the hour is, who do you got? The 80s Lakers led by Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, or the 2016 Golden State Warriors? We have a ton of comments via our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. I'm going to read just a few of these, and then we'll get to our guest for today's show. We have Bernard weighing in. He says, quote, "That's an easy question. Lakers with two exclamation marks." Lloyd says Lakers. We've got John who weighs in and says Lakers have the size and good guards. You can't guard Byron Scott. The Lakers would be better, I believe. No one could check Kareem or James Worthy. So we have no votes for the Warriors right now. And also Joanne Gerstner, she also weighs in. Joanne, you know, she's a friend of the show. Joanne, a fantastic professor here at Michigan State who works with us here at Current Sports as well. She says, "Hey, Al, peeping, you're from Paris." She's actually on the, she's in charge of the study abroad for the journalism students here at Michigan State, and they are out overseas in Paris. So, so hello to Joanne from overseas. Gotta love that. That's pretty cool stuff. You know, that's one thing I regret. If I have one regret from my college career, just one. I only got one. It's that I should have done a study abroad. That's the only thing. So, folks, again, weigh in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Well, I am excited to get to our guest for today's Current Sports. He's on the line right now, and he is the head of a squad that has done something that has never been done in the school's history, folks. This past weekend, the Waverly, that's right, the Lansing Waverly High School girls track and field team won a state championship for the first time in program history. Unbelievable stuff. Right now, on the line to talk about it is the coach for that team, Rex Wilkes. Rex, welcome to the show. How you doing, my man? Are you still riding high?
Yeah, still living high. just still can't believe everything. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's certainly a pleasure, Rex. And now, first off, I want to start by talking about what took place over the weekend at Zeeland West High School. For you, Coach, when did it become realistic in your mind that this team could win a state championship? When did it set in for you?
Probably after our regional meets, when we were looking at the seed times for the state meet. And noticing we were seated first in the 400-meter relay, the 800-meter relay, and Trishelle Roberts was seated third in the 100. She also qualified in the 200, but we withheld her because she was seated a little bit further down. Mm-hmm. And then Malin Smith, our thrower, was seated pretty high as well. So we knew that if we scored over 40 points at the meet, then we were going to have a pretty good shot.
Now, can you take me through the emotions on Saturday? You know, I read a cool article written by Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal on Monday that, you know, talked about just the emotions after the dust was settled at Zeeland West High School and how your respective athletes, I mean, they just stood at the high school still celebrating, you know, after everyone had left. Can you take me through the emotions on Saturday afternoon and how nerve-wracking was that for you?
It was very nerve-wracking. Because I was sitting there, they had live reporting of the scoring on Michiana Timing's website, and I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm looking ahead to see if Flip Powers has any other kids running another other event. And it was just right before the 800, I noticed that they had two girls One girl was seated at fourth, and one girl was seated at ninth. And they needed 6 points in order to catch us. So I'm sitting there watching the race, and I'm like, I don't want to wish ill will on anybody, but the girl ended up finishing fifth, and so we ended up winning by 2 points, which was kind of cool. I kind of remained calm about it, and I quietly let the girls know around the 2 mile that they shouldn't be leaving yet. And they were like, why? And they honestly did not believe that we were going to win the state championship.
So even when you told them that, I mean, it didn't set in for them in that moment.
Yeah, they're like, there's no way. There's something that's going to go wrong, or there's going to be some entry that we didn't notice, and somebody's going to do something.
So when you tell them that, Rex, as a coach, how do you keep emotions in check at that moment? To not get too high, just stay focused and finish out the meet.
I'm going to be honest. I think it's easier for me to remain emotionally focused when I'm talking to them. Mm-hmm. It's more like when I'm walking around, watching the meet, watching everything just pass on by. That's where the emotions kind of build up for me.
Gotcha.
Just because I'm kind of in my own head. I'm just thinking about all the everything that's gone throughout the entire season. And then it was just crazy. This is my second year, and to be able to have something like this happen, it's just intense amount of feelings that just come over you.
You know, Rex, with this being your second season, I can imagine that this accomplishment for you, you've got to naturally take a lot of pride in this, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a 2003 graduate of Waverly High School, and so it's just kind of cool that my high school coaches, I still coach with them, the boys coach, Dave Pike, he was my high school coach, and he was just there in stride, it was kind of cool because I was given an interview and all of a sudden I noticed it stopped raining and he's sitting there holding the umbrella over me. And I was like, wow, this really comes full circle, because I remember him being so supportive of me in high school and then now he's being so supportive of me after the fact. And just watching, because we're all one team, we're all Waverly, and it's just, I just love to give back to the community because I am who I am today because of all the teachers and all the coaches at Waverly.
Rex Wilks, coach for the state championship Waverly High girls track and field team. He is now with us here on WKAR's Current Sports. Rex, you've had a couple days for this thing to really, you know, just kind of die down a little bit. I don't know if it ever dies down when you do something like your program is done for the first time in school history. But, you've had some time to let it set in, I should say. Do your athletes know just how significant this is for the school's history?
I think some do and some don't. I think it hasn't really settled in because we haven't done it before, and so you don't know how to feel about something that hasn't happened before. I'm sure next year when they roll into the state meet, they're going to have a different set of expectations, and then for other meets throughout the year next year, they're going to be like, okay, now we got to win. There's a lot more pressure on their backs in order to win, and so that's going to be the next challenge, is to be able to bring them back down a level and to have them focused on each meet as it comes along.
Rex, you are a Waverly High grad. I got to ask the question, why has it taken this long? And is this kind of success realistically sustainable moving forward now in the near future?
It's very sustainable considering we took 4 sophomores and 2 juniors to the state meet. So we're at least going to have the majority of them for the next 2 years. I know we have a lot of up and comers from our middle school we're just gonna be inserting into the lineup and hopefully be able to get a little bit more out of them and to kind of allow these other seniors, they'll be juniors and seniors, to rest a little bit, because I know they've been running, they've had the track program on their backs for the last 2 years, and it's just been an intense like feeling for them. So
Rex, what makes this team special? Because, you know, reading that article, you know, it mentioned how this team was paced by 5 outstanding young women. One by the name of Trishelle Roberts, who won the 100-meter dash by a nose at 12.55 seconds, and who also anchored the 400 and 800 relay teams. What makes this group of young women so special?
It's the camaraderie between them. They all, when they show up to practice, they're always working on their handoffs or making sure they get everything perfect. And if they're not focused, then it's up to me to get them back to being focused. And they just love each other. And that's the biggest thing. When I came up and told them that they broke the school record in the 400-meter relay, they all just started throwing themselves around, crying, all excited and grouped up. And everybody, like, we were over by the finish line, and everybody's like looking at them. They're like, did somebody just like die or something over there? Because it looked like they were just losing it and just throwing themselves around. And all the photographers started taking pictures, probably wondering what's going on. And then I told Graham Crouch about how that they did just break the school record, and I just let them know that.
Oh, boy, what a moment. What a moment. Again, Rex Wilkes, coach for the state championship Waverly Girls Track and Field team. Now, Rex, what members of the team are getting serious looks to participate in track and field collegiately?
They've all received letters. A lot of it's just like getting information and stuff like that. So They're all pretty young, so they're still waiting on some more stuff. They're still going to have time to improve, and I'm sure by the time they get to be seniors, they're going to have multiple state championships.
Yeah, and this team is so young, Rex. I mean, that's got to excite you.
Yeah. it's like a coach's dream, and to have like to be able to have it like a state championship, like an individual or like a relay or something like that. And that's what we got last year. And so we added on and we built upon that for this year. We obviously Trisha won the 100, we won the 4x8 or the 4x2 and the 4x1. And our thrower, Nolan Smith, actually did super well over in the shot put. Just like take a second to she broke school records this year in the disc and the shot.
Wow.
She threw a shot of 43 feet, 1.5 inch. And over the last week of the season, she ended up breaking the discus record and adding, it went from 123 feet all the way up to 132 feet. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Unbelievable
stuff. She's a sophomore as well.
Right. Well, I tell you what, I love asking this question, especially when you have a young coach who does something like this, an accomplishment like this, makes history in this context. I got to ask you, Rex. What did you learn about yourself as a coach this year?
I think it's probably to be a little bit more lenient with the girls sometimes. I know last year I tended to micromanage a lot just because you're brand new and you just want to make sure everything's done the right way. And you just have to be a little bit more lenient with the girls because everybody, yes, they're out for the team, but everybody still has their own lives that they go back to. They still have their own classes. Some girls have their AP classes. Some girls have jobs. Some girls participate in outside activities. And so you just have to be a little bit more lenient and try not to put more pressure on them because they want to participate in more stuff.
So now looking forward, my man, again, you guys have done something that's never been done in school history. For next year, I know I'm really, you know, looking down the end of the tunnel here, but for next year, where do the goals and expectations stand? Is it to get back to this point and win the whole thing again?
I think that's definitely one of our top five goals. I know they broke the school record. That was the other goal for this year. So I think next year, looking ahead, I was looking at the 400-meter relay state record, which is 48.4. I think that's a definite possibility. But definitely state championship, a state record, and hopefully getting more girls qualified in individual events. So that's the main goal behind everything, and also trying to make sure we bring in these freshmen and try to insert them in so that way they're going to be ready to carry the torch in the future when these girls eventually graduate.
Well, I tell you what, on behalf of us all here at WKER's Current Sports, we want to extend a huge congratulations, Rex. What a year, my man, and I'm looking forward to see what you guys do next year.
Thank you very much.
Rex Wilkes, coach for the state championship Waverly High Girls Track and Field Team. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will introduce you to our newest additions to the Current Sports team for the summer, Bria Thompson and Sierra Pryor. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, time flies when you're having fun. Less than 10 minutes left in the show. And I want to introduce you guys to our newest production assistants throughout this summer here on the show. Now, throughout this summer, they'll be bringing you great content via Current Sports TV and radio. And I tell you what, I can already tell they're hard workers, all right? Their names are Bria Thompson and Sierra Pryor, and they now join me live in studio. Ladies, how you doing?
Great.
What's up?
How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. I can't believe it's only, man, less than 10 minutes left in the show right now. Let's get right to it. Right? So I'll start left from my left to right here. Sierra Pryor, I want to start with you. Can you kind of give us your background? And what really piqued your interest to go into sports broadcasting?
Of course. So I am about to be a senior right now at Michigan State University. I'm currently a student athlete as well, and I run track here. So growing up around sports all the time, I did soccer, tennis, basketball, and track. So I just grew up around sports. And now that I'm an athlete now, I really wanted to become an Olympic person, but that really didn't work out well. So my mind kind of went towards let's be more of a sports broadcasting person so I can be including in sports at the same time. So I want to be in front of the TV talking, get the dirty work, know the stories behind every athlete. So that what pointed me in that direction to become a sports broadcaster.
And I know, Sierra, we actually had your sister, Jay, on the show because
yes.
She was a member of the Michigan State track and field team as well.
Yes.
It just athletics just run in your blood. I believe your parents were athletes as well. Can you kind of give us the background on them, too?
Yes, of course. So my dad, he actually ran track and played football here at Michigan State. My mother was an athlete at Iowa for track and field, but she transferred to the University of Michigan and ran track there. My sister, she ran track here as well. Now she's our grad assistant, so she's like a coach to us. And now I'm currently here running track. And then my brother is coming here actually in the next 2 weeks here to play football here for the next 4 years.
Crazy.
So we're a track and football family, you can say.
I wish I had the prior genes. Okay, I'm just a radio host, all right? Radio and TV host. I mean, that's unbelievable stuff. All right, let's go to Bria Thompson now. Bria, you know, I know you have an interesting background because you're not from Michigan.
No,
you don't live in
Michigan.
All. You're just here for the summer, you
yes.
know, interning. And
yes.
I know Milliken University,
yes,
Decatur, Illinois.
Right.
Did I nail that right?
Milliken University in Decatur, Illinois. That's right.
Tell us about your background.
Okay, so my name is Bria Thompson again. I'm from Chicago, born and raised. I will be a senior in the fall at Milliken University, like you stated. And I really went into sports broadcast only because I can just be honest. I like to talk, you know, and I like to get, you know, people informed and, you know, just really just spark a conversation and get people on their toes. So, I mean, sports was only the closest thing to me. I played basketball since the fourth grade. I used to play for my university as well, but I don't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I also ran cross country in high school, volleyball, so you name it. My stepfather, actually, he used to be a coach at St. Ignatius High School in Chicago. So football, any sports you name, our family is well-rounded in it. So I just love to talk about it. I love basketball. You know, Chicago Bulls is my team.
MJ, baby.
MJ, baby, yeah. So definitely, I just like, getting, that's the fun stuff to talk about, you know?
Love it. So I got to ask you two, young ladies, what do you want to do in this industry? What is the goal, the ultimate goal? I'll start with Sierra, then we'll go to Bria.
All right, my ultimate goal is I would love to be Fox Sports or ESPN Sports, an analyst type, you know, sitting at a desk, debating, talking potential topics. Like, I love Jemele Hill and Michael Smith, like their whole layout of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I love to do.
His and hers, right?
Yes, that is like the big goal of mine. I just want to be on TV, not like more of a reporter type, but more of the analyst or debating type, spark a conversation to just talk over TV with it. So that's what my goal is.
Okay, Bria?
Yeah, I told you earlier, I really look up to Taylor Rooks. She's a Big Ten Network correspondent, and so I really look up to her. She's really great. She graduated from U of I, which is not too far from Milliken. So hopefully I'll follow in those footsteps, Big Ten analyst, maybe even in my retiring days, and that's a long time from now. But I hope to retire at ABC in Chicago because that is my city. Jim Rose, actually, he is someone that I look up to, and he is the sports anchor there. So one day I hope to be able to fill those shoes.
Nice.
Honestly, I want that to be my legacy in Chicago, honestly.
Fantastic. And actually, Isaac, we have our very own Jason Ruff is interning, I believe, at ABC in Chicago. So
Yes, correct.
Yes, so big shout out to Jason as well. All right, well, I want to bring this up because this is kind of Isaac and I just finished having this conversation about the NCAA and how it's a bit controlling to a degree. Now,
yeah,
you both, being student athletes, I want to get your take on the the NCAA as a whole as it pertains to the rules inflicted on you guys as athletes. Sierra, I'll start with you. Being here at a Big Ten university, I mean, you're going into your senior year with the Michigan State track and field team. Do you think the NCAA is a bit too over-controlling?
I would have to say they are a bit over-controlling due to the fact that rules, I feel like they're selfish because they're not in our shoes. Like, with the meal plans and everything, I know that's not as well with the track and field team. But, like, for instance, like, for track, we get per diem, you can say, per trip. So, therefore, we rationalize on how much money we're given. And that's kind of based off the school in a way. But overall, the NCAA, when it comes to prospects, like, it can be a friend. You can't announce them on Twitter. You can't take pictures. You can't mention anything. You can't even have a conversation about the sports that you're in. Like, nothing can take place because that's just the rules. So with me, it's just like, if it's my friend and she wants to come here, like, you can't do a pitch. You can't mention nothing. So that's a hard thing for us to do, because if you do, automatically you're in trouble. But it's just like, it's kind of over the line. Like, really, is that a big deal? Like, I didn't know mentioning or saying something over Twitter is going to be a big, huge deal like that.
Certainly. I hear where you're coming from. See, without a doubt, Bria.
I guess since I don't go to a big university and my conference or our division would be CCIW, I would just say we do the same thing you guys do. Mm-hmm. And we don't get the extra, the pay. We don't get any of those extra incentives. And so I don't feel like you guys should be – those rules should really apply too much. I mean, student athletes are all the same universal. We all put in the same work. We should all be able to, you know, like you said, take pictures or put stuff on social media.
Have some freedom.
Yeah. Have some freedom. It's not, it shouldn't be held to that, you know, high of a pedestal, honestly. I don't think that's not really too cool for me.
We only got about, not even 2 minutes left, just under a minute here. On average, how many hours do you put on per week when you're in the middle of a year, Sierra?
20 hours a week.
My goodness. Bria?
Same.
Wow. Okay.
Same. Well, same. It's like no different.
With that being said, we look forward to having you guys throughout the summer.
We
again, Bria
wait.
Thompson. And without a doubt, you will be hearing their voices throughout this entire summer. So you look forward to that, folks. All right. Well, we are out of time. Man, there's so much. We didn't even tribute Kimbo Slice, dude. Rest in peace to Kimbo Slice. I remember watching that dude in Miami just street fight with random dudes, and he was certainly a pioneer for the UFC. He will certainly be missed. So rest in peace, Kimbo Slice. We'll have more on his legacy to the UFC on tomorrow's show. But until then, take care. Thanks so much to Rex Wilkes for joining me on today's show. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.
From WKAR's studio.